Good afternoon. My name is Joseph Coleman, registration number 6856, and with council table with me is a representative of Landmark, Kathy Horan. This case basically involves a granting of a summary judgment on a mechanics lien case. That is the dominant issue. That is controlled by an affidavit, somewhat detailed, it's in the record, and after the motion was filed, the bank asked for time for discovery. So then depositions were taken, and the affidavit was buttressed by references to the deposition. The trial court granted summary judgment, basically stating, first of all, that he did not believe that Kathy Horan, and Kathy Horan was the original laborer who assigned her rights to Landmark. So they're somewhat interchangeable here. Kathy Horan had started to work, and the judge said she was not within the classification of people entitled to a lien. She had used the title at times of land planner, but the truth of it is she was also a general contractor. She hired the engineers, surveyors, draftsmen, and the statute specifically states that that type of work is lienable. In addition, the court said that work was not lienable, which is somewhat surprising because the statute specifically identifies various aspects of that work as within the statute. It doesn't use the word land planner, but looking through names to substance, plats aren't referenced. Plats are what land planners do. Engineers are referenced, and that's what was utilized.
Are you making that argument as to Section 101, Section 105, or both?
101.
Okay. At some point, I'd like you to address whether she did that at the instance of the owners, but you don't need to disrupt your argument.
Okay. The other issues relate to the court seemed to be concerned that this project, in effect, run aground. We contend it was the bank's fault, but for purpose of the Mechanics Lien Act, I don't think it's relevant. The truth is architects have done plans in Colorado for years that do not get built because the project stops, and they still have a lien. The exact same situation should apply when engineering work is done for purposes of a subdivision. In our age, obviously, you cannot just go out and start building 66 homes without going through the preliminary steps.
That would also be as to Section 101, not 105.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. And with respect to the trial court's ruling, the trial court decided to rely upon statute of limitations cases. This court had already advised that you would be ill-advised to rely upon statute of limitations cases to construe the Mechanics Lien Act. Had the trial court adhered to your recommendations, we may not be here, because the statute of limitations is narrowly construed for various policy reasons. Directly converse to that, the statute of the Mechanics Lien Act is broadly construed for completely different policy reasons. So our contention is that's where the court made the significant error in the Mechanics Lien aspects of this case. Now, what is unique about this case is that we have two groups of owners. We'll say successive owners. We have a group of four who originally gave Kathy Horan an option. In the option, she retained the right to all the value added she could bring to the project. So if she took a piece of property that had a $2.5 million value and increased it to $4.2 million, she held that price and she would be compensated quite handsomely. However, before she exercised her option, and worthy of note, it was an option. She wasn't obligated to buy, which would bring in equitable ownership issues. It was an option. Prior to exercise of the option, a new owner, potential owner at first, ultimate owner later, arrives at the scene. That owner basically says, if you will negotiate with me, I will turn this into a more traditional contract. We will contractually agree how much you are owed for your services. In return, you give up your option, and they agreed to that. They then, by contract, in the form of a promissory note, which is just a contract confirmation of a debt. They agreed that $900,000 remained due and owing on the mechanics lien. At this point, the trial court looked at the promissory note, which was secured by a deed of trust, and said, wait a minute, you waived your lien. We dispute that. Promissory note is not payment. That's recognized. And the deed of trust clearly did not show an intent to waive because it specifically said this deed of trust is cumulative to the statutory rights. You cannot be cumulative if you waived them. So in other words, we have two rights. The trial court said something's wrong with that. You shouldn't have two rights. Anybody who preserves cumulative rights has more than one right. So I think the court erred. More egregiously, the waiver was an affirmative defense of the bank. As an affirmative defense, they had the burden even in the summary judgment context. It's an intent-based defense. On an intent-based defense, summary judgment's entered. There's an affidavit that says, we never intended to waive. The owner supported that and said, we never intended to waive the lien right. But the court, by summary judgment, looked into Kathy Horan's mind and said, you intended to waive. That's about the same as giving summary judgment on a fraud claim. Intent is the one that's almost diametrically opposed to proper summary judgment. The other issues on waiver that the court brought up, or that would bar what the court's conclusion was, is a statutory provision in the Mechanics Lien Act. I think it's section 119, parentheses 1. It specifically states you cannot enforce a waiver unless you are parties to the waiver agreement. The bank was not party to the note. The bank was not party to the deed of trust. The bank was not party to the assignment agreement. The court relied on the assignment agreement and the deed of trust to say there was a waiver. The statute says, bank, you are not the party that can enforce that. And you're supposed to liberally construe that article, liberally construe so that you do not expand the waiver. So the court violated the statute and violated the clear language on the deed of trust. Both of them would support reversal of the summary judgment. We also cited to you a couple cases that were particularly appropriate to this case. We located Colorado authority that has the exact same situation. An original owner and someone starting to work for them. A sale and a new owner, and the person who started the work claims a lien. Even more pronounced or applicable, it's this Columbia Savings case cited in the brief. In that case, the person doing the work was very similar to Kathy Horan. They had a right to buy the property. They anticipated owning the property when they started work. Circumstances changed. They did not become the owner. They were afforded a legitimate, enforceable mechanics lien. The facts are almost identical. With the transfer of ownerships, work going back to the first work, even though it was with a different owner. Our situation, undisputed, the work started in 2006, continued up through 2008. In 2008, the new owner comes aboard. The new owner agrees that $900,000 is owned. Then who comes in? The last person in the equation, the bank records a deed of trust after all of this has transpired. Under those circumstances, a valid lien and valid priority to the lien claimant. The other case that's cited was the 3190 Corp case, which again, the work dates back to the first owner, the first day of work. It doesn't make a difference that the ownership change. In effect, the lien attaches to the property. I'll just briefly mention the unjust enrichment. Two issues somewhat of first impression, at least I couldn't find any authority in Colorado. The first one, value added, unjust enrichment. Does it apply when you are adding value in a collateral sense? If you take the bank's collateral from $2.5 million to $4.2 million, I contend that that is enrichment. The second issue relates to the when do you value it? Our market, particularly Grand Junction, 2008, $1.7 million was determined by the appraisers. Bank admits it. Value added. Admittedly, by trial, we acknowledge that that value added was probably half that. So the question becomes, do we join the restatement as the Colorado position and look at the time of the enrichment or the time of trial? And those are issues that I think the court should address. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, I am Jason Bailey, Colorado registration number 40953, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee and cross-appellant, First National Bank of the Rockies. The work done by Ms. Horn, especially in the period from 2006 to 2008, was not done at the instance of the owners. Instance meaning urgent solicitation. It was not the owner's request that this work be done. Rather, this was an endeavor that Ms. Horn took upon herself. There was testimony in deposition and at trial that she took on the risk of that transaction of doing this work, and the trial court in its findings and judgment indeed found the same. Landmark spends most of its time addressing the mechanics lien issue, and so I intend to do the same. While there are some novel issues raised in this case as to the mechanics lien case, for example, whether a land planner is someone entitled to relief under the statute, this court can decide this case, the mechanics lien issue, based on well-established issues of Colorado law. The primary being that there was no indebtedness between Ms. Horan and the original owners of the property. We know from the Bishop case that an indebtedness is a crucial element in any mechanics lien case. This was something that was one of the four reasons that the court in its order regarding the motions for summary judgment, one of the four reasons it said that the mechanics lien must be denied. And at trial, in its findings and judgment, the court again said there was no indebtedness. Landmark, I understand now, says that it's not important to ask whether or not there was an indebtedness between the original owners and Ms. Horn. The question is whether there was an indebtedness between the Ms. Horn and Osprey, the subsequent owner and purchaser of the property.
You're asking the first question. I mean, your analysis assumes the proper inquiry is the first question, whether there was any indebtedness between Ms. Horn and the
That's correct, Your Honor. And the reason we know that that's the appropriate inquiry is in part based on the C&W Electric case, in which they held that the rights to a mechanics lien must exist at or before the time that the materials or labor provided. This right cannot be provided afterwards. So in 2008, it was too late to create the conditions for a mechanics lien for work that occurred in 2006 and 2007.
How is the indebtedness inquiry different from the work done at the instance of the owner inquiry? Because it would seem to me that if the work isn't done at the instance of the owner, there can't be an indebtedness.
I agree, Ron. I believe they're entirely related, and I believe that the indebtedness question that the court discusses in the Bishop case comes out of the requirement in what is now 101 that work be done at the instance of the owner. I should point out that at trial, the Landmark conceded that they were not seeking work done after 2008. So whether or not the contract in the assignment agreement between Ms. Horan and Osprey, whether that could provide a substantial basis for a mechanics lien going forward is not an issue here.
Was it conceded at the time of summary judgment?
It was not conceded at the time of summary judgment.
How can we look in evaluating the trial court's rulings on summary judgment, how can we consider what happened at trial?
I would think that for purposes of the summary judgment, you would look, as you were indicating, at the record as existed at the time of summary judgment. I'm not contending otherwise. The second basis upon which this court can decide this without treading new water is based on the fact that Ms. Horn, in one way or another, alienated her rights to any mechanics lien, if one ever existed. And she did so in the assignment agreement. We know this because in the assignment agreement, she is selling all of her rights in the properties. A mechanics lien is a special property right, and so we could consider it one of the sticks in the bundle of property rights that can be alienated. And she transferred all of it to Osprey in 2008. Also in the assignment agreement, she did two other things. She agreed to subordinate her debt or her deed of trust, which she later took, to the bank's deed of trust. And in the assignment agreement at paragraph 6.7, Ms. Horn agreed to pay all subdivision expenses prior to closing and to hold the properties harmless. Under those circumstances, it appears that she was willingly releasing anything that she had at that time if the mechanics then existed. Mr. Coleman for Landmark indicated that he believes Ms. Horn is and was a general contractor on the contract, and that's not something that we would concede. In fact, if you look at the owner affidavits attached to the our cross motion for summary judgment, part of their affidavits indicate that they did not hire Ms. Horn as a general contractor on the project.
They take the position they didn't hire her at all for anything.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
did Ms. Horan make the I was a general contractor argument at summary judgment?
Not explicitly, so far as I remember. Also indicated here in argument was that the mechanics lien statute should be construed broadly. However, we know that while the remedial proportion should be construed broadly, the whether or not an individual is covered by the mechanics lien statute is to be construed strictly. And here, in this case, where a land planner is not indicated to be someone expressly considered under the statute or developer, whatever her title may be, her work should be looked at with a close eye, and the statute should be strictly construed when determining whether or not the work that Ms. Horn performed was the type of work that could be permitted under the statute. There was some discussion about whether or not Ms. Horn had an obligation to buy the properties. There was at one point a dispute as to whether or not contracts to purchase the property, the agreements between the original four owners and Ms. Horn, whether those were option contracts or purchase agreements. And the importance being that if they were purchase agreements, if she had an obligation to purchase, then she may be an equitable owner, and as an equitable owner, she would qualify as an owner under the mechanics lien statute, section 101. And owners, as we know, are not parties entitled to claim relief under the mechanics lien statute. If you look at there are four agreements between the four original owners and Ms. Horn. Their titles, there are three of them are titled as purchase agreements. One is titled, I believe, as an option contract. But if you look at, I believe it's paragraph 5, in one section there, it indicates under what circumstances Ms. Horn can terminate the contract. And it provides that if she determines that the city of, or maybe it was the county of Mesa, was not going to grant her permission to pursue this development project, then she could terminate the contract under a couple conditions. One is that she has to make this determination within 1 year of the contract date. The second is that she provide notice, written notice to the owners. She did not, within 1 year of the date of the contracts, the contracts were dated in October of 2006, she did not by October of 2007, act to terminate the contract. So at least, at a minimum, by October of 2007, Ms. Horn was obligated to purchase the properties, in our opinion. Landmark also references the Columbia Savings case, for the Counts case. There, the case is distinguishable from this one in that an option holder, I believe, had some work done on some property in which he held an option. He did not, in the end, vest those option rights, did not continue and purchase the properties. And so after the fact, after his options had expired, he sought a mechanics lien to recover for work he had done on the property. One difference here is that the purchase agreements or option rights, whatever you want to call them, did in fact ripen. They just ripened in Osprey's hands, but these were in fact the same rights that Ms. Horn was holding in 2006, 2007. There was some discussion about an increase in the value of the property, and I think that relates to the unjust enrichment argument.
This is a summary judgment. Juncture, at least.
I'm sorry, which?
Has to be resolved in her favor.
As to the value of the property, sir?
Well, as to whether her work created any additional value on the collateral.
I think in terms of the mechanics lien issue, I believe that would be true. As to the unjust enrichment portion of the case, it would not.
Why isn't that a disputed factual issue as to how much value her efforts added to the property?
As to the mechanics lien issue?
No, as to the unjust enrichment issue.
Why is it? I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Why isn't whether her efforts added value to the property for purposes of the unjust enrichment claim at least a disputed factual issue that we must at this juncture resolve in her favor?
Is your answer that issue is resolved following a bench trial and was not resolved on summary judgment?
That's correct. As it applies to the unjust enrichment issue that was tried, the trial court considered the factors applicable and essentially said, we don't know that they received a benefit. We don't believe that they met their burden of showing there was a benefit. We also agree with Landmark at this point that any mechanics thing, if it does exist, must arise under subsection 101 rather than section 105. There have been some allusions to section 105 in some of the briefing, but 101 would be the only way in which that would attach. We're asking the court to affirm the trial court's decisions, both denying the mechanics lien and the unjust enrichment claims. We have stated a cross appeal as to the excessive lien claim. However, we would only ask that you consider that if you should remand on the mechanics lien issue. Thank you.
To address a couple points that came up, the contracts with the original owners specifically provided that it authorized Ms. Horan to obtain subdivision approval and to plat the property into residential subdivision for purposes of ultimate building of the residential homes. So there's no question she was authorized by owners to work on the project. As to the compensation, again, I believe Colorado case law recognizes that the compensation, like the contract with the owner, like any contract, can be amended. So I can start working on your house for $5 a day, and later you can agree to pay me $1,000 a day. I'm not limited to a claim for $5 a day once the amendment. Similarly, Kathy Horan is not limited to having to buy the property and then sell it to the new owner, as opposed to saying, if everybody will agree, and everybody did, if everyone will agree, I will agree not to buy the property, but we are now going to agree upon a new compensation package. And there's nothing retroactive in the sense that the work was done and some form of compensation was due, either a concession on the purchase price, because they were going to have to hold to a 2006 purchase price. That consideration would have been paid. The only thing that adjusted was the manner of payment. So yes, the work does go back to the time when the owners authorized it. As to this issue of general versus subcontractor, I think the pertinent part in the Mechanics Lien Act is, did you contract directly with the owner? And conceptually, that's what's basically considered the general contractor. when the general contractor or the person who contracts with the owner hires subordinates, subcontractors, experts, whoever, they also have a lien, but that doesn't mean that the original contractor, Kathy Horan, can't assert the claim for everything, particularly when she has paid those bills. So consequently, we have never stated that we're not seeking any lien after 2009. We are seeking for all the work we've done, but we agree that we agreed upon a sum certain. It was basically a fixed fee approach. We continued to work from 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, and I believe into 2010. But we had agreed to cap our bill at the $900,000. And that was an agreement with the owner that was implemented, agreed upon, signed, and enforced before the bank was even in the picture.
Help me understand, please. What is there in the record that shows that the $900,000 was intended not only to compensate Ms. Horan for work she had done up to the assignment, but was also intended to compensate her for prospective work that was as yet unperformed and undefined?
Okay, there wasn't a lot of work, but the assignment agreement states that Kathy Horan will continue to assist, as requested by the owner, efforts to get the final plat recorded. Then, as market conditions turned, that step became more intense because they tried to go from a single family project to a townhome project, etc. But the assignment agreement would be the answer to your question. It did envision continual efforts.
Does it say that she won't seek any further compensation for
this? Yes, it basically says, Kathy Horan, here's what you get, here's what you do. And so, our view is the contract was fully integrated in the sense that duties were identified and compensation was specified. The option contract was mentioned. I don't particularly care about the titles to the contracts. If you read them, you will see that there was no right of specific performance. The sellers could not mandate. And Colorado case law on equitable title is that when you are obligated to purchase, and I believe we cited some cases which state, if it's only an option, the equitable title does not transfer. And so that's exactly our situation. None of the contracts had specific performance. None of the owners could require Kathy Horan to buy. It was her option right. And under an option right, you can also preserve a mechanics lien. And I believe those were the issues that were raised that I wanted to respond to. Thank you. We do request that the court apply the statute governing waiver and also just the somewhat common sense that a waiver issue is not appropriate because it's intent driven and it should not have been a basis for summary judgment. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. A written opinion will be issued. Of course.